Hello, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Growing America's Roofing Workforce, the podcast where we interview the people working to recruit, train, and retain the future of the roofing industry. I'm John Espenshade with the National Roofing Contractors Association. Today, we are here to talk workforce development and dollars and cents, plain and simple. What can we do to turn some of this workforce development stuff into things that affect the bottom line of your business and hopefully make it grow from there? And joining us, Amy Staska, Vice President of NRCA University, and Jared Ribble, Vice President of Certification at NRCA. Welcome back, y'all.
Thanks, John.
I'm grateful for y'all's participation. So from my perspective, I know very, very little about how the workforce development stuff actually affects the bottom line. I just assume that, you know, people need workers and that's good and we should find them. Jared, if you wouldn't mind, what's some kind of estimate for exactly how much revenue an installer is doing and kind of how workforce development might tie into that as an intro?
Every company has to do the math for themselves. But I'm going to give an example. What we do is we ask you to think of the overall annual income of your company. The every dollar that you bring in, we're not talking net and all some the good Harvard business math kind of thing, just dollars in that you take in. And then how many field staff, how many people installing the roof does it take to earn that amount of money? So you take your annual gross revenue divided by the number of field staff and out pops a number. And in broad strokes, that's the amount of income that every installer makes your company. And just also thinking about it, so often we do not measure how much income an individual installer makes our company. We think of them as an expense. Well, they cost this much in insurance and this much I got to pay per square and all the expense that comes along with your installer. But really, what I'm here to encourage you to start doing is start measuring your installers by the amount of income they make you. So take your total annual gross revenue, divide that by the number of installers you have, and out will pop the number of how much each installer's potential income they earn you. Now, I'll tell you, John, I do this all over the country, and I will ask the room full of contractors, what's an average annual gross revenue for, you know, not tiny companies, not small companies, and not huge, massive companies? What's the average? And oftentimes the group will say something around 20 million. 20 million is the average roofing company, the amount of gross annual revenue they do. Well, and then I'll ask, well, how many field staff does it take to earn that 20 million? And they say, well, yeah, maybe about 70. Okay, so we do that math in the room. That means that $286,000 of revenue can be attached to any one of their installers. And it's always interesting to see the room kind of their eyes get big because they're like, $286,000 this installer can earn me? And they almost don't want to believe it. And again, there's expenses attached to that, but I'm trying to get contractors to focus on the revenue that their installer can make them. And it can average out to about $286,000. I encourage all of your listeners to do this math for your individual company, because it will probably end up being about that number.
That's an incredible figure, right? So total revenue divided by number of installers equals the amount of money that each installer is bringing in revenue per annum to the company.
But there's a caveat, John, that not every installer is 100% effective. I go all around the country, like I said, and I will ask, how effective is a brand new installer when you just put them on a roof with no training? They will be effective to a little bit because they can tear off and they can clean up trash. But they're not 100% effective. How effective are they? And most groups will tell me, probably 10%. Okay, so if an installer that is a true professional and can do every part of the roof system, they are worth $286,000 to your company annually. Well, we need to subtract 90% effectiveness from that 286,000 for an installer who's only 10% effective. So that means, if we do the math, if we're following along, that means a brand new installer is likely only worth to your company $28,000. You are probably losing money on that installer immediately.
Wow. So the gulf between someone who is highly effective and someone who is very, I mean, minimalistically effective, you know, certainly 10%. I mean, you know, 10% effective is basically a wheelbarrow, you know, sitting around and collecting dust. So it's incredible to think like how much potential resource a company already has that they're just not utilizing to the right extent. And certainly growing up those 10% employees into being, you know, even just 50% as a, you know, 100% eventually is the goal, certainly. But the kind of benefit that could fall on a company if they just take their 10% people and get them to 60%, you know, like it's a significant gulf, but that's certainly, you know, not outside a trainable option and a trainable employee.
Yeah. And you can probably do it very quickly if you get focused on training them and getting them as quickly as possible from 10 to 30 to 60, like you're saying, and then all the way up to 100. Because John, the difference from $286,000 down to $28,000, companies need to understand that for every moment, every job that they don't have effective installers, they are paying that difference. That's an expense that you're actually paying.
It's an incredible amount. And I'm not sure that a lot of companies would be willing to pay that much, you know, for inefficiency as an inefficiency tax per employee. That's got to be heartbreaking. Jared, since, you know, certification is absolutely, you know, your bailiwick. And I want to know about how do we increase the efficiency of these installers and some certifications that are available. So once the installer is, you know, deemed highly efficient, what kind of ways are there to prove that?
Well, sure. That's the pro certification, program. The pro certified roofing installer is the evidence that this installer can do all the details around a job. And so the whole idea is to point these new installers to pro certified and get them on the path of training to get them up to pro certified, because those are the installers that are at the $286,000 level making your company.
I want to talk about other parts of the crew apart from just the installer. You know, certainly the installer is really where the rubber meets the road on this, but there's an entire vehicle around that tire that I'd really like to explore and talk about what's available for them too. And Amy, that's you. So for things outside of the installer course, what is the benefit for making sure that crew leadership is being trained up, and what are some of the things available there?
Yeah, I would say that the leadership aspect, and this is a drum that NRCA has been beating for a long time, that, you know, sort of as goes the leader, so goes the crew, right? I mean, all of this is true when we talk about the effectiveness of new employees. And I feel like this is what leads companies so often. And this is not just the foreman, but we're talking about like the folks in the office too. This is what leads companies to put brand new installers on jobs right away, feeling like they're going to be able to ramp them up faster, right? Because they're going to be surrounded by people who are doing the work. They're going to see how the work is done, and they're going to get up there and get it done. And I think that it takes a really solid leadership perspective to be able to pull back and say, you know what, like as much as we would like this to happen in a week or 2 weeks or a month, that is not actually how it's going to happen in the best way, right? Like, it's that short-term view versus taking a little more of a long-term view. And I realize the tension of that, right? Because the conversation we've had so far is you get somebody new on the job and they're only 10% effective and we want to get them better quickly. And I'm just going to argue that the best way to get them better quickly is to have a more reasoned and intentional training method where you're actually not putting them up on the job site right away and expecting them to become better because the people around them are better, but because you're taking the time to have a systematic look at what they can and can't do, and that you're offering training for those folks that's going to help them to become better quicker in the long run, right? That sounds like a contradiction, but that's exactly what needs to happen. And it's only a company that has a good leadership perspective that is going to be able to kind of parse that out and nuance that in their heads.
So I think what I'm kind of getting from your answer is that while, of course, you know, short-term benefits are wonderful, but if there isn't a long-term training schedule, and if you're not bringing someone on with the intention to, you know, it's part of the intro to the podcast, recruit, train, retain. Mm-hmm. And having that long-term idea in mind, while it's going to, you know, it's not going to be a 30-minute or even maybe a 2-day amount of training in order to get this person to where they can be 50 or 60% efficient. But understanding and kind of planning on the development and growth of that person as a long-term investment, as you know, as opposed to just, okay, they need to be efficient now. Like, they are going to be increasingly efficient, and then they're going to stay that way. And then it kind of sets them up for other parts of their career, right?
Exactly. I mean, I wish that we had data. You know, whenever you look for data about the effectiveness of training, it tends to be concentrated in like large multinational office-based companies. There's not really a lot of great data for the population that we're talking about here in terms of how can you take them in the most efficient manner possible from that 10% to 20% to 30%, 50 and greater, right? But what we do know is that good training involves a lot more than people watching the job get done. And what we continually try to teach in our leadership-oriented classes, particularly to foremen, and I know they're the ones that have to push the message up, but a foreman is tasked with getting the job done, right? Like, he or she has a timeline and they are given all of the things. Like when Jared talked about the fact that we look at installers as costs, right? They're given the man hours or however things are equated at their company. And they're expected to bring in the job at or below the cost that they're given. So whenever they have a new person on that job, that person is like, they're either dragging things down or they're helping to push things forward. And by their very nature, it's going to feel like a new person is a drag, and that it's a waste of time, a waste of money. Every time I teach a foreman leadership class, I ask, and I do it in different ways, but I sort of force them to say, where does training and teaching and coaching fall on your list of priorities? And almost every time it will come out at the bottom. And that is not because foremen are bad people. It is not because they don't want to train people, but it is because that is not what they're being evaluated on. So it's very hard for them to do good intentional training and to bring people up under that model.
Sure. I mean, people align themselves and they make their goals and they set their priorities based on what they, you know, what the key performance indicators are. And for foremen, it's time and money. Mm-hmm. And it may not be any more complicated than that. So it makes sense that there would be a little bit of resistance to this movement that certainly, you know, NRCA is trying to be a part of, which is to help companies understand the importance of investment in training and development. And that while it doesn't necessarily seem like as important a thing as time or money, with that investment, you are going to make a lot more money with a lot less time. Before we go on any further, I would like to take a moment and remind everyone that this episode of Growing America's Roofing Workforce is brought to you by Densdeck Roof Board. Rise and shine, roofers. It's time to talk solar support. As energy codes tighten, solar roofs are on the rise. But what about the added stress caused by solar panels? They generate electricity, which increases the risk of fire. This means you should use non-combustible fire-resistant materials on solar roofs. Solar equipment can also add weight to your roofing system, and it may require maintenance, which spikes the risk of damage from dropped tools and heavy foot traffic. One more thing, if your roof and solar panels have a similar lifespan, building owners can avoid the cost of panel removal and reinstallation during re-roof jobs. Densdeck roof board is non-combustible per ASTM E136, so it won't burn. It also provides rigid substrate to handle the weight of solar panels, plus Densdeck roof boards fight punctures and can help extend your roof's life. So specify a Densdeck roof board into your next job, and don't forget to visit us at the International Roofing Expo booth 57-21. So getting back into certifications and where people can find, hopefully, you know, some installers, taking it all the way back to the beginning side, where can people try to recruit installers that are not 0% effective? You know, where could they maybe get someone who starts at 20% without maybe poaching?
There's this young woman, she's probably 18 now. Her name is Mia Perez. And I actually think you've had Mia on your show before. Mia's from, I think, Northern Indiana.
Yep.
And she was in high school. Her dad was a flooring installer. She went to work with her dad. She learned to cut, fit flooring and just loved working with her hands, loved working with her dad. Her dad, unfortunately, passed away, but passed on to her this love for the trades. So she gets involved in shop class. And her teacher took her to a career training center, took the whole class on a field trip. And she was exposed to roofing at this career training center. And she goes back to her shop teacher at high school and says, hey, I kind of like this. And the teacher says, I know nothing about roofing. Let me call a contractor in the area and see what I can find. Contractor in the area sends over some attic stock material, sends over some training material. And there, the shop teacher and Mia, they figure out how to roof. And the shop teacher, being smart, goes to the other shop kids and says, let's build Mia a mock-up, and puts it in the corner of the shop class. So now Mia, after school and on study hall, she's in there practicing roofing. Mia works her way all the way to the national championship of Skills USA. She placed fourth. And she says she's coming back again to do it again this year. We're excited to see Mia's progress. But what was so fascinating, and John, you were there, to watch thousands and thousands of kids interested in the trades. We cannot say kids don't want to work these days. We cannot say kids, all that, they're just going to college or they don't want to work. They don't want to work with their hands. It's not true. Come to Atlanta. Come see Skills USA, where you'll see thousands of kids who want to work with their hands. The question is, are they learning and getting exposed to roofing?
And that really is the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yes. And I would say, I know NRCA is putting a ton of effort, appropriate effort, to get roofing into trade schools. Because that is where we find great young talent who are proving that they want to learn, proving that they want to work with their hands, proving that they'll show up on time, because they're showing up on time for class. So they will transition to showing up on time at your job. And if roofing companies will work and partner with their local trade school, we've already got the curriculum built. All that you guys have to do, roofing companies have to just partner with the local trade schools, and you can start to funnel those interested workers right into your company. Who would not want Mia to work at your company? There's no company in across the US, across the world, that would turn Mia down for a job. And there are more and more Mias out there. We have to go present roofing to them. We have to go attract them into our industry, because they are great, great kids that want to work with their hands, that will show up on time and do a great job for us. And they're getting trained and have the opportunity to get trained and learn in a trade school. But we need the roofing companies to engage with them to help those trade schools get the programs up and going.
There's so many pieces to creating Mia's, because yeah, certainly Mia's story is one that resonates very well. I think about it often, especially when, trying to plug in and get schools turned on to roofing and get that curriculum in there. It really is about creating a bunch of Mia's. I want to take the example of a CTE student who eventually is partnered with a roofing contractor. They participate in skills. And then what is that person's total career path look like? What's available to them? Let's draw it out from start to finish.
Sure, John. That's a great question. And thanks for asking it. What is so special about the roofing industry that we have to make sure that we are telling this story and getting this story out there is that there is a legitimate career path for the roofing professional. And it starts, we intend it to start at the CTE school, at the trade school. And at that trade school, if the roofing companies in the area are getting involved, they will be funneling workers into their company, young kids in that college age range, right into their company who are already getting trained and getting skills and knowledge. So they're showing up at your company, not at 10%, but maybe 40, maybe 50, maybe 60%. So the value of a contractor getting engaged in the trade schools is extraordinary because you're not the one doing all that work to do the heavy lifting of getting them from 10 to 60%. The trade school is doing that. You're just there helping support it and funneling them into your company. So now you have, let's just say that that worker comes in at 40% effective right from the trade school. Now you take and intentionally train them up to 60, 70, 80, 90, 100%, and you have them get their certification, the evidence, the proof that they are a 100% worker, that they are, in fact, a true professional. And then the next steps in the career are going to be foreman, going to lead that crew. The next steps is going to be into superintendent, where they're leading multiple crews and make sure the jobs are all happening. And then, of course, it could be into further leadership and general operations manager, and then possibly owning the company someday. The sky can be the limit, really. I do want to just make one note. As people advance, I mean, you want to have that career path laid out for them. You want them to be advancing into your company. But there's just a reality that some of them are going to hit a ceiling, because your company may not have enough positions available for general operations or for superintendents. I don't know. It's just the makeup of your company. And there can be a reality that that person needs to move somewhere else. And the best companies I know open up their hands to help that person, because they believe in that person and they support that person to the degree that it's even okay that they can't grow anymore in their company, and they will help them find a place where they will continue to grow because they care about that person so much. The best companies are the ones that actually do it, even if it means they have to support them moving on into a different company or into a different place.
Yeah, sure. There's a, there's a limit on all people for different ways. And certainly, part of the beauty of great relationships is, some things don't last forever and some things do. But if you're doing the right thing for both sides, you never end up with any kind of regrets. Now, Amy, I'd like to go to you and talk to you about, training foremen, maybe a little bit about the FEI, the Future Executives Institute. And let's talk a little bit about the financial implications. Let's get back onto turning workforce into dollars and how some of the advanced, the leadership kind of classes that that your team, puts on, helps businesses get the most out of kind of that side of their working crews.
Yeah, well, that's a very multifaceted question. Probably my favorite role in a roofing company is the foreman. Just by and large, we start our foreman classes with a quote that says that a roofing company will struggle to be anything other than mediocre if they do not have excellent foremen. And we talk about the implication of a foreman's leadership on the dollars and cents of a company. And there's no hard, fast number for this, but when I ask foremen, like, how many pennies on the dollar do you think you impact as a foreman? You know, sometimes people will go to 100%, and that's probably not totally realistic. But I think for sure, you're talking about in the 80s and 90s cents on a dollar, because you're talking about materials, labor, effects on insurance, like training up foremen effectively. I think it really is going to be where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck in terms of the work that's being done at a roofing company. I mean, there is all the strategic stuff. I mean, I get that. And that does happen a lot in our Future Executives Institute. And we could talk a little bit about that. But the foreman in particular, like, we start out those classes talking about the fact that we want them to be able to have better tools so that they have better production, better quality, and better loyalty. And I mean, really, what could be better at a roofing company? You know, when you're talking about the fact that the foremen are the ones that lead all of the installers, they're the ones that interface a lot with customers. I mean, it's huge there. And even in talking about that career path, right? I mean, I think it's also legitimate to say that, yes, there's a ceiling, and there might also be a preference. Like, somebody could know, they can see how effective they are, whether they're a foreman or a superintendent, like the effect that they have on their companies. In fact, I was teaching a foreman leadership class a week ago for a company in Indiana, I think. And there was a superintendent at that company who had been in his job, I mean, not in his job as a superintendent, but who had been working for this company for the entire duration of the company, which is 45 years. Like, you don't get to meet a whole lot of people who are still in field leadership when they're at that age. And what I loved is, you know, just having a conversation with this guy during a break. He's like, I could retire. He's like, but honestly, like, I love my job. I love what I do. And then he says, and he got kind of a little quieter when he said this, and he's like, and they pay me so much money. Like, here's somebody in a job, like, celebrating not only his appreciation of his job, but acknowledging right there. Like, I talk to people all the time who are like, they've got the boats, they've got the vacation houses, they've got the RVs. I mean, this is a job where you can make a lot of money. And also I run into so many people who experience a lot of job satisfaction. So yes, I mean, there are lots of office jobs. People can move up to be project managers, estimators, department leaders, directors of operations, and ultimately, like Jared said, presidents or CEOs. But I think there are a lot of people who also find a ton of satisfaction working in the field and being, you know, having that pride of seeing the roofs go on and being able to point to that. So I love that aspect of the work. And obviously tons of dollars, right? That could be represented by having great leadership there. And you're asking about our higher level educational opportunities as well. And certainly a keystone initiative of NRCA is our Future Executives Institute. And that is a multi-year, it's a three-year program where people apply, they get accepted. And then it is three intense years where folks will gather six times over those 3 years, and they will study every aspect of running a business. So the strategic planning that I alluded to, right? I mean, it's super effective to have people who know what they're doing and installing the roofs. But you also have people who are imagining, who are guiding, who are sussing out, like, what sort of customers is it that we want? What could we be doing in the industry that's different than what other people are doing? Really, really important. You have to have people who are intentional about managing the finances and understanding insurance and benefits and, you know, all of that stuff that comes along with running a business. And not only that, but obviously people who are well-versed in safety, you know, having a good safety director. This is a high hazard industry. Lots of legal ramifications go along with everything that happens in roofing. So there is a lot to know about running a business like this. You know, I know that some people, get involved being an installer and get sort of tired of, you know, working for the man, quote unquote, and want to do it for themselves. And I applaud that, right? Like anybody who wants to start a business, I think that that's awesome. And also there's a lot to know. There's a lot to know about doing it well. And we really hope that people will come to NRCA or to other, I mean, there's a lot of great training that happens in our industry. So right, we're not the only shop in town, but I think that what we have is really amazing.
Yeah, and I think the most important takeaway from, you know, from this podcast in general, and certainly from the, you know, advice that y'all have shared, it's the most important thing is understanding what trainings are available, that they're all around, that it's an essential part to maximizing the financial efficacy of your business, and that no matter what individual you have, you really should be trying to get that person to their ceiling, whether or not it is a foreman level, whether or not it's superintendent, whether or not they just want to be the best roof installer that they can be. It's about maximizing the potential of each individual that works for your business. And from there, watching the money come in. So with that, I would again like to thank Amy Staska and Jared Ribble. Real quick before we sign off, we have this month's workforce development update. About the time that this podcast is going to drop, NRCA will be in Orlando for the first Roofing National Craft Championship demonstration. We are going to have 4 pro-certified installers, a couple from California, 1 from Texas, and 1 homegrown in my home state of Florida, compete for who is the best pro-certified thermoplastic installer in the country. Starting in 2025, Roofing Prentices, engaged in standardized apprenticeship programs, will be able to compete at the National Craft Championship if they are getting that training through their local Associated Builders and Contractors chapter. If you would like to talk about this or find out more, please contact me when you can. So once again, and just about to sign off, a happy Women in Construction Week to Amy Staska of NRCA University. And thanks also for joining us again, Jared Ribble of Certification. All right, thanks everyone, and I'll see you next month.